class, and welcome to the New York Film Academy Hour. Today we're going to be talking 90s R&B music videos, classic horror, and how to get your film off the ground. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Hey guys, it's Joelle Monique.
Hi, and I'm Pegarad.
And we're so excited because we have the Chair of Industry Lab, producer extraordinaire, music videos, features, like amazing television, just everything, chock full of knowledge. Please, please help us in welcoming Kim Ogletree.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Good. I'm excited. Okay, so we always start off with the same question, and that is, when did you know you were in love with movies?
Oh, my goodness. When I knew I was in love with movies, when I saw Citizen Kane.
Oh.
Yes, I'm dating myself.
Classics.
It is a classic.
Not that you were there when it was premiering.
No, right. I wasn't. But, you know, I mean, come on. It's like the movie of movies.
Yes, it is. It is AFI's number one pick. It is everything.
Still, right?
Yeah,
year after year.
Just reigning. No, nothing really can touch it. Cool. So what about Citizen Kane? Where it was made you fall in love with film?
I think it was the acting, the story.
Mm.
The story was politically based. I'm from Washington, D.C., Maryland area. So it resonated. You know, I grew up there. And it was just done so well.
Yeah.
So well.
Those radio actors really,
yeah.
They brought it. They came
they
with
did.
It. The full character
they
packages.
They did. They Absolutely. Did. They did. They did.
What brought you to producing?
I fell into it. Yeah, I fell into producing. I wanted to be an anchor.
Okay.
I went to school. I went to Howard University, and I studied in journalism, radio, TV, and film. And actually, Frederica Whitfield on CNN, we were classmates.
Oh, wow.
She's pretty much the only one that actually pursued it. All right. Everybody else kind of said it was four of us, and we fell into different areas. And, you know, I started writing music video concepts. And after that, I said, you know what? It's time to get out of New York, because I was modeling at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this is senseless work. Let me go do something that my dad paid so much money for me to do, was to go to college and get an education. So that's when I started doing music video concepts. And I started actually meeting with executives, and they started liking them. So at the time, you know, it was like, you know, mid-'80s, late-'80s. And there weren't that many African-American women or women, period, doing mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of pushback from the men. And I said, you know what? I don't need this. I'm going to La La Land. All right? I'm getting in my car with my drop top, and I'm flying across country, and I'm going to the ocean.
Classic American movie style.
Okay, yes. Exactly. And that's what I actually did. I jumped in the car. I got a music video deal here to do, I can't remember the name of the song, but it was for the artist called Shine Hit.
Nice.
And I rolled into town. Went right into production, did it, and ended up staying. And I connected with a really good friend of mine. We actually came out here together, and we had a company called Creative Image. And it was three ladies, and one was Shaka Khan's sister, Tammy.
Uh-huh.
The other one was dating Shaka's brother, Tanya Duche, and it was me. So Tanya wanted to do hair, makeup, and wardrobe as far as repping various people like Vivica Fox back then. And Tammy wanted to be a manager. And I wanted to do music videos.
Yeah.
So we had the full package. So we were located at 6363 Wilshire. That was our first office. And we were known as the girls on Wilshire.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So I started doing music videos then. They started casting. You know, her sister wanted to be a casting director. So she started casting music videos. And it was all the video girls coming in and out. And, you know, I aligned myself with various directors. And then one day, I knew Russell Simmons from back east. I walked up to Russell and I said, Russell, I want a music video. And he was like, why would I give you a music video? And I was like, because I'm asking. And he said, okay, I'll give you $15,000 and here's our new artist and go do your work. So I did. And this is a crazy story, okay? I can't mention any names because everybody knows who these people
are.
Oh.
So we shot the music video.
Mm.
And it came out dark.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So you couldn't really see anything.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
The DP, whom everybody knows now,
oh.
I can't mention their name, did not open the aperture or something.
Oh, boy.
So I went to Russell and I had to sit in the room and say, oh, it was a creative choice.
Oh, no.
And he was like, Kim, it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but it's not that dark. And he said, it's dark. And I said, okay, it's dark. dark. He said, I tell you what I'm going to do, because clearly this wasn't your fault. I'm going to give you $25,000.
What?
And you go out and you bring this back right. And yes, I brought it back right. Nice. And from then on, I got work from Def Jam, and then I got work from Sony, and then MCA Records back then, and then it kind of sort of blossomed for me at Motown, and then I aligned myself with Lionel Martin, who was the vid kid back in New York, Video Music Box, and he was in demand. So it was two producers. I opened his West Coast office, and another producer, her name was Sabrina Gray. She opened, well, she was working in the East Coast office. So everything in the middle of the country, like, I don't know, from, I don't know, Mississippi to the west and Mississippi to the right. I did everything to the west in the islands, and she did everything to the right in the islands and overseas.
Wow.
Yeah, so we kind of grew together.
There's so much to unpack in there. I want to roll back really quick. You said you started by doing music video concepts. Mm-hmm. What do you, are you just listening to songs and like, I think this will make a good music video? Are you going to agencies? Like, how are you getting involved in that?
I mean, I would listen to the lyrics and I was a narrative person even back then. And I would just write, I don't know, whatever I felt or I saw, you know, and I took a lot from the movies because I love watching movies coming up, you know? Mm-hmm. So I pulled a lot of narrative ideas from that and actually, Guy liked one of my concepts back then. So they kind of sort of, no, the group Guy.
The group Guy, okay.
That's
group
guy. Yeah.
Okay. We're talking hip hop here, people. Okay, hip hop put a lot of money in my pocket back in the day, okay? I love hip hop. So they used pieces of it along with another, you know, concept, and that really launched me into actually writing.
Amazing. Well, we actually have a video clip for one of your more maybe famous videos, and I wanted to show people because you know it's everything
you might
to
know
me.
This one.
Yeah. What? First of all, let's just
those
look
are
at
my
this.
Kids.
Yes. The aesthetics of this music video just give me so much life. Like, look at the mourning. Like, look at the pain. Mm-hmm. And then also, it's just so pretty. Like, the purple lights, like the rundown stations.
Love this.
These guys also look like they're having a lot of fun in here. They're like,
they were having a ball. They grew up in this business.
Yeah?
They did. I mean, I did another group called ABC, which was before them. I did a lot of Biv 10 acts.
Okay, okay.
Okay. And that was Belle Biv DeVoe. Okay.
Yes.
And
love them.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, yeah.
Poison, one of my favorite songs.
Classics.
Yeah. I those were some great times. And they were babies. You know, and ABC, they were babies. Aisha, so glad to meet ya. You know, that was one of my videos.
So, okay, did you coordinate this video?
Or no, I was a producer.
You produced this
video. I was a producer. This was Lionel Martin's concept.
Okay, all right.
Classic concept.
So, talk us through what a producer does, because I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, producers just handle the money, or they're like, right, like everybody has a different opinion of what a producer does.
Well, you know, producer handles the macro.
Okay.
That's how I go into explaining it. I mean, we basically take a concept. Like, I can read a concept and tell you exactly how much it costs. I can break it down and say, okay, this is going to be this much, that much, that much, this much, this many days, that many days in my head.
Sure.
But I don't share it.
Oh.
Okay.
This
I don't share it because people tend to lock you into a number. Okay. So it's not until I can get into budgeting and scheduling that I can really give you a number. Mm-hmm. So we go out and, you know, sometimes we're the creative force behind anything happening. So if a concept comes to me or if a script comes to me and I like it and it has tentacles, which I call legs, it can be a music video, it can be a video game, it can be a board game, it could be a series. That's what I attach myself to as a producer because I'm not really into one-offs. More so franchises.
Oh, okay.
If I attach myself to something, it's got to have more than just one hit wonder.
Why is that now?
Because it's about the revenue stream.
Well, there you go, folks. Okay. It's a business.
It's a business.
Smart.
Right. So, you know, once I identify a project, I'll align a director to it. And then the director will bring more creativity to the script. More than likely, they'll have to modified in some way, shape, or form. I've never gotten a script where we actually shot it the way it came in, okay? So they put their hands on it, and then I'll start hiring, you know, the individuals that will make it happen, like the production designer, the DP will come to the table along with the director and the first AD, and then we start formulating the crew. Okay. Once the crew's formulated, then we start looking for locations, and then we go out and we find locations that make sense. Sometimes I don't even show the directors all the locations because they're not affordable. Okay. So I have a deal with the location manager. She show me first because there's no need of exciting the director.
If they can't
with
afford
something
it.
We can't afford.
This is okay. Solid advice when shopping for wedding dresses, I hear.
Speaking of getting the crew together, do you have a crew that you keep going back to over and over again?
I have three sets of crews.
Okay.
I have a low budget crew. I have a studio crew. And then I'll have an anything that's down for Kim Ogletree crew. Okay. That can range from studio, you know, IA guys to non-union guys that are all and gals that all come together just because I said, let's do this.
Okay.
Okay. So when various budget ranges come to me, it's easy for me to pull it off. I don't have a problem with it.
It's nice to keep several teams in rotation, too, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, I have to like the story.
Okay.
You know, I have to like the story. It's not about just the money. Sure, okay. We like the zeros in the bank account. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is about the story and what resonates with you and stories that need to be told or you want to tell. I'm into African-American content, but I'm really into showing or doing projects that display us in a positive light. That's kind of sort of my legacy. And I love horror. Not slashers, but horror.
Okay. Well, let's just transition straight into horror because you've worked on one of the most successful franchises, Hellraiser, which is super dope.
Yeah.
So creepy.
I know. Yeah.
Very much so.
Dead. So wonderful.
Very much so.
So I'm curious, you said you always loved horror. When, what movies brought you into horror, and then how did you end up on Hellraiser?
Well, I've always liked horror. Not slasher. Let's be clear. Okay.
So not Saw.
Slasher, Saw, Hostel, those type of movies, not my thing.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, I watch them, but I kind of watch them.
Yeah.
You know? But I like the thriller horror aspect of it. When I fell into the Hellraiser franchise, it was kind of like a fluke. You know, I was unemployed. It was in one of the valleys. I call my business hills and valleys. Okay, I was in a valley. And I just submitted my resume to, what was it, Media Match. And in 15 minutes, I got a phone call.
Oh, wow. Well, damn.
Actually, I thought I was being punked, okay? And I know the person on the phone, which was one of the producers, where I'd be like, what is wrong with this girl? She just submitted to the website. We're interested. And it just so happens that that company happened to be the low-end budget range for the Weinstein Company.
Oh.
Okay. So it was a complete fluke. Complete fluke. And then when he told me, I said, oh, God, when I grew up, I didn't really watch Pinhead because that's peeling skin back and, you know, peeling the skin away. And I was like, I don't know. But then I met with the director. The director was really cool. And
the
other producers,
can't remember.
We'll look it up.
Yeah, we'll look it up. But I know it was for Art and Logic. I think Media Art and Logic. It was a company out of Wilshire. But anyway, he was very, very good. He had done Dracula 2000.
Oh, okay.
And I'd seen Dracula 2000, and I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. Maybe it won't be that gory. And you know what? Honestly, it wasn't bad. I thought it was going to be worse. But now I look at horror movies in a different light because I know how it's done.
Sure. Yeah, once...
It was such a bummer.
Yeah.
Because I said, oh, now I know how they slash throats.
Did it ruin it for you now that
it
when you watch
did.
It?
It did. And now when I watch it, I was like, oh, I know how they did that.
They say that there's
I know how they did that too.
That there's a period for every student where suddenly the veil has been lifted for you and what was once magical is now just work. And you get to push past that and it becomes magical because you're creating the magic. But there's definitely a period where I remember my film school studies where I was like, oh my God, I know all of the things. I understand the camera tricks and the lighting and the symbolism behind it. And you're just like, oh, this used to all be so magical.
Right.
So tell us, you said you liked thrillers. What are like maybe three great thrillers students should watch? Maybe three underrated ones, ones people wouldn't think about.
I'm writing these down because I need God, a new thriller in my life.
That's hard, you guys. That's really hard. Oh, God. True crime?
Ooh. Oh. True crime.
Ooh. That's hard. Three thrillers. So many going through my head right now. How do you give just three?
You could do more. You could just rattle them off too. I'm sure that I don't mind watching more movies. Oh.
Like, would you consider Sixth Sense a thriller?
Yeah, that's a thriller, but that's kind of on a horror basis to me.
Conjurer
and, you know, those type of films are... Amityville Horror to me was a thriller.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What's another one? We were going to watch yesterday in class, and one of the students was like, no, no, I can't watch that. I can't. And I was like, are you serious? It's not that intense. It was White Skin, I think.
Oh, I don't know this one.
I haven't heard that one. Okay. Great. Noted.
The lady, I know the lady in white.
No. It wasn't. That was okay.
Yeah.
But I tell you, which was a good thriller. Hmm. What was it? Crimson.
Crimson Tide.
Crimson Peak.
Crimson Peak.
Crimson Peak.
Yes, Crimson honey. Peak. I loved that
Crimson
movie.
Crimson Peaks is one of the best movies to me of all time.
Okay.
Wow. I was going to say House on Haunted Hill.
It's
ooh.
The original.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
okay.
The original. Okay.
It's okay.
I might live vicariously through my father, who still gets tripped out at the floaty parts. He doesn't like when people float in movies. And my dad doesn't get scared. So when he's like tensing up, he's like, no, I hate it.
Right.
And, like, as a kid, I was like, oh, this is really scary.
Right.
It definitely has nostalgia feels. Okay. Watch those movies, guys. I love a good thriller.
Yeah. I love a good thriller too.
So it seems a theme that's been kind of reoccurring is everyone seems to have to make horror. A pit stop in horror.
We mm-hmm. love horror.
Mm-hmm. Because it's cheap.
Okay, it's cheap. I was going
to
ask you why.
Horror is cheap. It's easy. You know everyone's going to die except one person if you want a franchise. So you need to keep someone alive so you can do a prequel and a sequel. That's why I like franchises. The horror films, you know, it's all about how you die.
Mm-hmm.
You need to die well. You know, I hired an actress because she died well on Dexter.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, her name was Jessica Camacho. And she's actually on Flash now.
Oh.
She's a new character on Flash. And she died well. And I told Twinkie, who was here last week, I said, mm-hmm. Twinkie, I really like her. And she was actually in a pilot we did for Fuse with Tim Story.
Okay.
And it was called The Hustle. And it got picked up.
Nice.
So, you know, you have to die well in horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch how people die now on in movies. I do. I watch how people die. You know, there was a show on Freeform, and this character, I loved his character.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he died, it was just like, is that it?
That's
all you're giving us? You know, you've been on 8 episodes and this is it? You die like that?
You know who dies really well? The actor that plays Papa Pope on Scandal. Oh, man. I can't remember his name. He's also
Morgan?
Yes. He's also on
Joe Morton.
Yes, Morton.
Joe Morton.
Yes.
Right.
He's also on an old sci-fi show where he would continually die and come back. He just, every time he dies, I'm like, I believe this. Like, you feel the spirit
Terminator.
Leave his body.
Terminator. Oh my gosh. Terminator.
Yes.
Remember Terminator? He died in Terminator.
He sure does.
Yeah.
I love when they die with their eyes open. Right. And somebody comes by and closes them. That's
yeah, you see the light go on their eyes, you're like, this is really acting.
Right.
Because most likely you never experience, like, you can't draw on that actor's toolbox and I remember the last time I died and this is going to be really easy. Hopefully you can't use that reference.
Right.
So what's your tips and tricks for creating a movie on a short budget?
It all goes back to the story.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I have to have a really good understanding and relationship with the director. When they're trying to pull something off, if it's not on the page, it's not going to be budgeted properly unless, put it this way, you need to compromise where I tell you to compromise. Mm. Because if you don't, you got to give me from somewhere else. It's just like saying, oh, I'm going to give you that crane for 3 days. And you're like, wonderful, I get the crane for 3 days. Then I come back to you and I say, you know what? We went over a couple of days. You needed to go over. I needed to give you that time because I'm a creative producer as well. So I know you need 100 extras in the scene tomorrow, but can you get away with 75? Because you want that crane for 3 days. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a beg and a borrow kind of sort of thing with each other. Sure. And you have to have that type of relationship. If you don't, then you have just chaos.
What advice might you give to producers who find themselves in a relationship that's not so, like, you're already in the thick of it. You know, you've got mm-hmm. to complete the movie mm-hmm. and you come against a director who's like, my vision, I cannot compromise. What actions might they take to kind of...
You go and you say, well, it's coming out of your check.
That's
it's coming
really
out of your check
advice.
Because it's got to come from somewhere. Mm. If the studio or the investor is not coming out of their pocket and you just want to see this happen for yourself, then it's got to come out of your check. Just like with music videos. Mm. A lot of those were for the Gipper.
Okay.
For the director.
Right.
Because he wanted to put it on the screen. And I said, well, I'm taking a check home. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I have bills to pay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's my mantra now is pay yourself, then do the work.
Copy. Right on. Solid advice.
Because you have to survive. You have to maintain your existence because if you don't, you're frustrated. Your bills are overdue. Everybody's walking away with a check. You're sitting at home trying to figure out, oh my God, am I going to be able to pay my rent? Am I going to be able to keep my phone on? Am I going to have gas to put in my car? Mm. You can't function like that properly.
Right.
You just can't.
Because I'm sure you have a producing style. Has there ever been a time where you've had to change the way you produce in order to sort of fit the mold of the team you're working with?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I like to have kumbaya sets.
Mm.
Okay. Everybody is one. Kind of sort of thing.
Okay. So important.
Because this is real. The way you start is not how you finish on any show. Okay. I could be kumbaya with you today and 20 days from now and day 22, something happens and don't bring it back in my office. Okay. And you're like, I don't want to go back in her office. All right. So you kind of sort of have to. I don't know. I'm a gut person. Mm-hmm. So when I hire people, I kind of sort of know there's always going to be what I call a cancer in the group that you have to cut out.
Okay.
Hopefully it's one. And then you can move on. Because if you don't, and I see this happening a lot, they let it fester. Okay. And those type of people are venomous. They're poisonous. It spreads. Well, how much are you making? Oh, I'm making this. Oh, well, I'm not making that. I wonder, how much are you making? How much are you making? How much are you making? And then it resonates. And then people start asking, how much are you making? How much are you making? It's nobody's business what people makes. Mm. You know, I try to be fair and within a $50 or $25 difference in salary based on keys. And, you know, we come down. But, you know, the people who resonate all of the negativity, they have to go sooner than later.
They'll definitely take a set really fast, particularly when it's amongst keys.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden people below the bar are like, I'm not sure who I'm following or listening to. And then you have anarchy on a set where we're all working on one project. This is very confused. Like, who are you, like, against? You're really just playing yourself at this point.
Exactly.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Industry Lab, which you're the chair of Industry Lab at the New York Film Academy. We had Twinkie Bird here last week talking about her project, The Counter.
The Counter, 1960.
Yes, which is very exciting. And I know we have a lot of great projects coming up. I wanted to ask you, how did you get involved with Industry Lab? And what are you excited seeing coming out of there?
Well, I got involved with Industry Lab because it's what I do.
Mm.
And I saw early on when it was formulating that they needed producers. And so I kind of sort of jumped in and kind of volunteered my services. And then I stepped away a little bit because it kind of was, nothing was going on really. Mm-hmm. And I try to bring projects of note to the lab, and I always have. I think that's very important. I mean, now that, you know, I'm the chair of the lab, I'm trying to bring really high-end, intense projects to the lab. Mm-hmm. Because students need to need to see and understand real world versus life of world. Life of world is great, but when you walk out those doors, that's not what you're going to get.
Yes.
You might not get 3 months to prep a short film. Mm-hmm. You might get 8 days to prep a short film.
Sure.
We just had an Oscar-nominated filmmaker, Wanto Jimenez, come in and talk about his film Time Code. Mm-hmm. And he had 2 weeks of prep, spent no money on his location or cameras. He got a Red Dragon for free, used GoPros on sticks to mimic like garage cameras, and said he spent the bulk of his money in post.
Okay.
It was shocking to me to find out how much you could get for cheap, how little time, and yet you could still make an Oscar-nominated film.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
School Bubble did not teach me that.
Yeah, you can. I mean, it's all about access. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell my students. It's all about having the access. What type of relationships are you forming as you come up through the ranks? Mm-hmm. All right? I would not have people to say okay to me if we didn't come up together. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all about who you know. This is a who you know town. Okay? It still is time and place and who you know.
I think it's important that you say not, you know, who knows you, but who you know.
Who you know.
Who you're going after, who you're trying to attract.
Absolutely. And now we have an offshoot of the Industry Lab. I just created the Writer's Room. Industry Lab Writer's Room.
That's exciting.
And Jeff Bird, who's Twinkie Bird's brother.
He's a director. Again, who you know.
Right, who you know.
Who you know, running things.
And, you know, he's just finished doing Rebel. Excuse me, with John Singleton. And he is a part of the writer's room, along with his partner, Lamont McGee.
Yes.
And we have Katie Lyric from Swish at Birth. And Justine Bateman's going to be coming through. She's going to be writing as well. And so now they're putting together the Bible. And next week, students are allowed to come into the room. Because they couldn't hear the Bible, because you just can't. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
That is secret and locked down.
That's a secret. But the pilot, they'll be a part of writing the pilot and you know, being a part of the lab that way and working with Lamont and seeing exactly what goes on inside of a room, how it works.
Fascinating. For students watching who don't know, a Bible is basically everything, like what are the key shots for the show? What main characters? What is the arc of? Sometimes multiple seasons, yes? Mm-hmm. Like usually one through three,
is it
when you pitch?
He's got five.
Wow.
He's got five
goodness.
Seasons.
Yeah, and I know that now it's very popular to pitch entire seasons.
Well, seasons are shorter.
Yeah.
You know, they could be 6 episodes, 8 episodes.
Right.
So it's very rare that you'll get 13 episodes.
Especially since we're exploring all these different...
Exactly. Like Twin Peaks. I'm watching Twin Peaks now.
Yeah.
Only because it's coming back. And I never gave it a shot when I was younger because I just didn't dig it. I don't understand it. But now I can look at it and say, you know, David Lynch was intense.
Yes, ahead of his
for
time.
That, yeah, for that time period. And that's when they did 26 shows.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day, they did 26 shows for network. And then they would rotate those shows again for the off season. Right. So it was very rare to see. I was like, this is a long series. You know?
I just did The West Wing and had a similar experience.
Okay. Yeah, my God. Exactly.
Is Industry Lab open for all students?
Absolutely. It's open for all students that have completed at a minimum 3 semesters.
Okay.
So going into your 3rd semester, you can apply.
Great.
And you have to pass a safety exam.
Okay.
In order to actually get in.
And you've been involved for a couple of years with Industry Lab, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What is the transformation you're seeing students going in before they, like, as they're coming in and then coming out of Industry Lab?
Well, there hasn't really been much of that. That's what I'm trying to formulate now. Mm. So I like to see what level you're on. Mm. Because the way I want to structure it now is there will be teams. Okay? Just like on the outside. You know, your DP has his AC, his AC has his second AC, you have your gaffer, you have your key grip. That way, you swing together, you work well together. Hmm. Versus taking this AC, putting it with this DP, taking this second AC, putting it this with first AC. That's how it used to go.
Okay.
And the situations could work, but a lot of them really didn't work that well.
It sounds to me like originally it was operated kind of like you're thrust out into the real world and you're like, you're lucky to get the jobs.
Exactly.
Again, but it sounds like maybe you're building a network of who you know and making sure that these teams are kind of going to be good to go mm-hmm. as they graduate and be able to sell themselves as a team. Not am I just a DP, but I've got my team stacked and then we have credentials together to show you what our packages will look like.
Exactly.
That is amazing.
It's exactly. Awesome. So that means that the people hiring them are down to hire the team as a whole.
Exactly. Okay. If they're looking for that, this is what normally happens. You know, and I would say to myself, it's like, you know, these kids should be happy if they just get on a project that's coming from the outside, right? So it used to be you had to be a key. Well, I know if I'm coming in and I'm hiring students to do something, they're not going to be the key.
Sure.
Okay, let's be real.
They're learning.
Right? They're learning. Exactly. And so basically what we do now is whatever the company asks for, mm-hmm. we kind of sort of facilitate. We'll put it out to the crew of kids that belong to the lab. They'll respond. And as they respond, we'll see which ones are on that team together. And then we'll shoot them to the producers or the directors or whatever.
That is amazing.
So it could be two. It could be the first AC and the second AC. They're on the list. So they'll go out together. Right. Or it could be the DP and it could be the gaffer, and then they'll go out together.
Love that.
That kind of thing.
I love that.
Can you very briefly explain to us the next project coming out? You said you teased the writer's room a little bit. What is that project?
Tease the writer's room. 221 Baker Street.
Yes.
Is a cross between Penny Dreadful and Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what we're working on now. We're working on that teaser, proof of concept, and that's what we're doing.
And we're going to have a lot.
There's so much more happening. There's a show called Lollipop that they're doing. Zero to Hero.
I've heard of these.
There's last summer we did a movie with Mario Van Peebles that went through the lab. Mm. That was like one of my first resonating projects. It's called If. You know, hopefully we can get him on as well.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And there's a lot happening.
That's
amazing.
There's
a lot happening through the lab.
Well, we're excited to bring you guys more people coming from the lab. We're going to have Lamont on in 2 weeks. Next week, we're going to be on Friday instead of Thursday. So Friday at 2:00 is when class will be happening. And we're going to have Asad Yacoub, who is actually in the Industry Lab program as a student at the New York Film Academy. But he's already directing music videos for most of the contestants currently on RuPaul's Drag Race. He's done amazing stuff. His videos are like big and colorful and a lot of fun. I'm really excited to talk to him about what he does. We appreciate you guys joining us today. Let's thank Kim Ogletree for coming.
Kim.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me.
I learned so much today. This was amazing. Thank you. Join us next week. We'll be right here for the New York Film Academy Hour. Thanks, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.